from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this Wednesday edition of Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth here with you, taking you up until Smashville Live at the top of the hour, where Brayden Gull will be hanging out with former Predators enforcer and broadcaster Stu Grimson, now with the NHL Network. Should be a lot of fun. Smashville Live tonight at 7, originating from Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville, one of my favorite places in Nashville to go get some good grub, get some good drinks. You can go out and hang out, have those grubs, have those drinks, and watch Brayden and Stu on Smashville Live. But joining me now in studio is Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast. Robbie, how are we doing today?
I'm doing wonderful, Porth. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. What are you doing here on the bye week and the All-Star break? Any special plans?
You know, I've been twiddling my thumbs for a few days now. I helped out with a baseball camp the other day with a bunch of screaming kids running around.
Shout out to Zach Curtis.
Shout out to Zach Curtis. He cut off all his hair, which is cardinal sin, but that's okay. But other than that, not much, man. Just hanging out, enjoying the off week, okay, much like the players are doing.
Well, I saw on Philip Forsberg's Instagram on his story that he went to San Francisco to see his buddy George Kittle win an NFC title.
Yeah, he and I are going to have a conversation about that when he gets back, and it's not going to be a pleasant one.
I had to weave that into the conversation since the 49ers beat your Packers, but I have no room to talk because my Titans lost to the Chiefs. So,
well, my Packers got open hand slapped by the 49ers, and I'm sure Philip Forsberg enjoyed every second of it. For those of you who don't know, just very quickly, a lot of people ask me about the relationship between George Kittle and Forsberg and like where it came from. I talked to him about it a couple months ago, and he was just like, yeah, it's his girlfriend and Kittle's wife are very good friends. Kittle lives here in the offseason, and that's how they know each other.
Gotcha.
So they're friends that way.
Okay.
Nice. You're curious.
Nice little bromance between George Kittle and Philip Forsberg.
Yes.
But we're not here to talk about Philip Forsberg and George Kittle, although it was funny to see Forsberg's reaction on the field after the game.
It was funny to see him get carried off like a child.
So this team is sitting at 51 points through 47 games. They have games in hand on basically everybody in front of them in the Western Conference. The Nashville Predators do. And it's been an interesting few weeks for this Nashville Predators team. We talked shortly after the firing of Peter Laviolette. You were on the day after the Boston game, and we basically said, you have to put that one in the rear view. It shouldn't count against John Hines because it was an almost impossible situation that he was thrown in, not even being on the ice for a warning skate or a practice before he was behind the bench for a game. So, in the five games since then, what would you say is kind of your first impression of the Predators' new head coach, John Hines?
Well, I knew I was going to like him when he showed up and he was bald like myself. So that we got off to a really good start that way. I think what I've seen just from an on-ice perspective so far is there's more of a focus on quality than there is really quantity. I mean, of course, you want quantity, but he's really, really harped on getting to the middle of the ice, both offensively and defensively, and they've made some changes defensively. You know, under Laviolette, they were typically man-to-man, so at some point you'd find your defenseman maybe chasing a guy up the wall. I mean, sometimes all the way to the point almost, and that was, you know, there are advantages to that. If you make a play on your man, you can have an odd man rush going the other way, and there's certainly some aggressiveness and some advantages to that. They've shifted away from that a little bit. They've gone to more of a kind of a hybrid way of doing things. If you notice now, when they're playing, there's always a defenseman in front of the net. Always. And that did not used to be the case. I think that's helped with the goaltending. I think Pecorine talked about that I think it was being interviewed by Hal Gill here on the station and talked about how much he likes that adjustment. So defensively, I think they've been able to do that. Offensively, I don't think they've changed too much so far just because they haven't really had time to do a whole lot. But they have, just if you look at the analytics and the numbers, they have gotten better at shot quality. It's a very limited sample size, and you know, you kind of wait to judge it probably till the end of the season, to be honest with you, to get a full sample size of what it looks like. But so far, I've been impressed with what I've seen. Now, the results from a win-loss standpoint have been a mixed bag, but I think this break can do them good to where you can go home, you can kind of reevaluate what you're doing. John Hines knows the players on the team now. He's got a relationship with them, and he can kind of reevaluate the best way to attack it. But I think from what I've seen so far, I've liked the adjustment to making sure, number one, you're limiting quality on the other side of the ice, and number two, you're trying to get to the middle, which they were not doing a good enough job of at all.
Well, there were many times under head coach Peter Laviolette in the system that was deployed, even going back into last regular season, where there were way too many chances right in front of the net that you didn't have either defenseman accounting for one of the other forwards or other players from the other team that was right there, Johnny on the spot, either on a rebound or a back door, and you're thinking, how does this keep happening? And, you know, I kind of get the sense, and I'm sure you do too, that Peter Laviolette wasn't changing a lot of the things that he was kind of coaching or teaching with this team. And from that aspect, that was needed. But last Thursday night against Anaheim, I was concerned that it was a lot of the same that we had seen from this team in previous months. And they did respond well Saturday night against Buffalo. Wasn't a pretty win, but it was a different-looking team Saturday night than we saw Thursday night against the worst team in the Western Conference at the time. And the consistency issue is something that is definitely going to have to be worked out for this team to end up making a sixth straight postseason.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, you have to find a way to be consistent towards the end of the year because they play a ton of games in February coming up. I mean, they're going to be playing all the time in February. They've got to catch up to the rest of the Western Conference. So
they start with four games and six nights right after the break.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got to hit the ground running. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, I agree with you. I thought Thursday's game against Anaheim was terrible. I thought it was awful. They responded very well on Saturday, won that game. Like you said, it wasn't pretty. But I almost think they kind of need a game like that. When it's close, it's tight, you're forced to defend, you're forced to make some clutch plays, which they made in the third period there. So I think that's the sort of games that they've been finding ways to lose this year. They won that. Now, does that translate to after the break? We thought it might translate after the break at Christmas when they were on a roll. And then it did not, let me tell you. They went kind of back in the tube after that. So to me, I'm interested to see how they come out and respond. It's always interesting, especially the first couple games after a bye week and a break. You can be very rusty. Now, the good news is Toronto is on a break as well. So,
well, Pittsburgh was too.
Yeah.
For the holiday break. Yeah. And they had won 4 or 5 going in. They lost 4 or 5 coming out of that break, and that ended up getting Peter Laviolette fired.
Yeah.
Yes, we can all sit here and say the bye week is going to do them good. It comes at a good time. Well, I don't really know if we truly know the answer to that, you know? It's not like John Hines is getting a full week of being able to further install what he's trying to accomplish with this team. They're all either in another state, in another country, and John Hines is back home. So who knows? I mean, they get back together Sunday. They play Monday against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Then they go to Washington, go to New Jersey, then host Vegas 4 games in 6 nights. Simple fact of the matter is they're going to have to come out guns a-blazing out of this break. No questions asked.
Yeah, and you got to get the forwards going. And he talked about that a little bit before the break and was like, you know, one of his main jobs right now is to get his big guns playing at a high level. And that's what he talked about when he came in here and took the job of maximizing the potential of this roster. To me, I think Josi, we would all agree, has been superb. Ekholm's been fine. Ellis, when he's been healthy, he's been very good. And hopefully they can get him back for their sake after the break. But to me, this conversation starts with Arvidsson, Duchesne, Johansson, Forsberg. Those four guys, your money guys, and we could talk about Granlund and Smith too, but those four guys specifically are going to have to be what carries you. And John Hines has got to find a way to unlock how to make them consistent night in, night out. You've seen it at times this year, especially from Duchesne and Forsberg. You haven't seen it anywhere near enough this year from Johansson and Arvidsson, and he's got to figure out a way to get those two going.
Well, Ryan Johansson is someone Monday night that I harped on a great deal in terms of he's only on pace for 47 points.
Yeah.
You have to get more out of Ryan Johansson. And he scored a big goal Saturday night. Who knows how he's going to respond after the break. But it kind of looks like John Hines is using him in more of a defensive role, put Austin Watson on that line alongside Callie Yarncroke and Ryan Johansson. I don't think that's a long-term play at all, though.
No.
I mean, you can't have Ryan Johansson playing a defensive role or skewed defensive when he's making $8 million, and when he's on his game offensively, he can drive this team's offense.
Yeah, and you got to find a way to get that going, because if you don't, your team is limited in what they can do. And I think Saturday night when he was matched up against Eichel, I think that was more of a by-design defensive role specifically against Eichel to put Watson on that line. I would be very surprised if we came back next week on Monday and Watson is back on a line with Johansson. Now, maybe he is. You're going up against Austin Matthews and you got a whole lot of firepower on Toronto's team for sure. But there's no question for this team to make a run in the unofficial second half of the year after the All-Star break, he's got to be a big part of it offensively. And we were talking to John Hines last week about it, and he said, you know, Johansson's at his best when he's moving his feet and he's using his size. And I've said for years, I don't think he uses his size quite enough, especially in front of the net. I mean, he's such a big guy. He's difficult to move. That's where he scored his goal the other night against Buffalo, was right around the net. I need to see more of that from him. Everybody talks about, you know, him shooting the puck more and being more aggressive. I've kind of given up on that, to be honest with you. I think he just kind of is what he is. He's going to look to pass first, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I want to see the aggression. You can still be aggressive and look to be a playmaker first. I mean, it's not mutually exclusive. You don't have to fire away from the corner every time you have the puck to be aggressive. But the moving his feet thing, when John Hines was talking about that, I kind of watched. And you can go back and watch some other games, and it's not like he's not trying. He's just not. He's kind of gets stuck gliding around a lot of times in the offensive zone. Saturday, he was driving his feet. He was moving around. He was never stationary. And I think that John Hines really hammered that point to him. Now, hopefully, for Johansson's sake, he can stick with that and move forward here.
Coming up next, the trade deadline is a little more than a month away. What are the Predators going to do at the February 24th trade deadline? We will get into that next. He's Robbie Stanley. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, on this Wednesday evening. Ryan Porth and Robbie Stanley here with you on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up at the top of the hour is Smashville Live. Stu Grimson will be joining Braden Gall for Smashville Live over at Boom Boz Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. You can register to win a signed copy of Stu Grimson's book. So Stu Grimson coming out with his book back in the fall. You can get a copy of that tonight over there at Boom Boz, but you have to register to win. So, Robbie, February 24th will be here before we know it, and we know the Predators are going to play a lot of games between now and February 24th, and that is the date of the NHL trade deadline. Last year at the trade deadline, the Predators were very active. They were buyers. They acquired Brian Boyle a couple weeks before the trade deadline. Then on deadline day before the horn, they go out and get Wayne Simmonds and Mikael Granlund in separate trades. And those trades did not work out. And it's not the first time that trades at the deadline have not worked out for this Nashville Predators team. And to be exact, they have 14 games between now and February 24th to kind of figure out whether or not they're going to be buyers, whether they're going to be sellers, well, whether they do both or neither. If you had to say right now, Robbie, with the team sitting 6 points out of a playoff spot, where do you think GM David Poile goes at the deadline?
Well, let me first say, I don't think that neither is really an option for him, because I think when you take a look at this roster, you've got 14 games before the deadline, like you said. I think in a perfect world, David Poile would like to have a pretty clear picture by what this team is going by about game 8, game 9, because if you're playing it all the way up until game 12 or 13 and you still don't know what position you're in, at that point, it's probably too late. I think there's really not a circumstance, if I was general manager, and I can't speak for David Poile on this, but if I was general manager, I'm not sure there would be a circumstance out there where I wouldn't be looking to trade Mikael Granlund, because, and let's be honest, it's just not a fit here. I mean, it's very obvious it's not a fit here. He's got, I think, 16 points this year in 41 games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
21 total points in 57 games.
Yeah, so like it's just not a fit here. And I think regardless of what the Predators do, if they go on a run here and they start winning games, you know, maybe the caveat to this is if Mikael Granlund just suddenly catches fire and puts up 15 points in his next seven games, then maybe you consider keeping him for the stretch run. But I just don't see any sign of that happening. I don't think you can let him walk away for nothing. I do think there would be interest around the league for him. Do I think you're going to get like a first-round pick back for him or a top prospect? Probably not, just because of the production that he's had with the Predators. But David Poile is very good at selling things, and I would sell him on this guy was a perennial 60-point player in Minnesota. It just didn't work out here. So there's not a circumstance that I can imagine where I wouldn't try to do that. Now, being a buyer or a seller, I think a lot of that's going to be determined by how close they are to the playoffs. 6 points to me right now is a pretty good gap, especially when you've been as inconsistent as the Predators have been. If you close that gap in the next 5 or 6 games and maybe you're 2 points out, then the narrative starts to change a little bit. But you have to see that with this team if you're David Poile, and that's what I think he's waiting on to see kind of the light bulb click off. And if he doesn't see it in the next week or two, I think you're going to see him be a seller at the deadline.
With being 6 points out, you also have to climb over 3 other teams to get into the playoffs. So it's not like it's Vegas at the number 2 wild card and then you 6 points out, and it's just you two fighting it out, and you have 5 games in hand on Vegas.
Right.
There are other teams in this mix that you're going to have to beat out. Now, they have a good amount of games in hand on all of them. Chicago, Winnipeg, Vegas, Arizona, they all have 50-plus games played. Nashville sitting at 47. So they're in a good spot in that realm. But still, you're 6 points out, and like you said, you can't really go up until that game in Chicago on the 21st or at home against Columbus on the 22nd. And determining off the result of one or both of those games to say that you're going to be a buyer or you're going to be a seller. I mean, John Hines is really going to have to get this thing. For me, for this team to be a buyer, they're going to have to look pretty impressive over the next few weeks. For me to be convinced that they can go out and spend assets to go get either a rental or trade deadline acquisitions and feel good about it. Whereas, you know, last year Columbus went out when they were sitting on the outside looking in. They made huge trades. It worked out for them. You could do the same thing and not work out, and then you just waste all those assets.
Yeah, and the other part of it is this. Like, if you're David Poile, you have to be honest with what you're seeing too, because maybe they creep back into the race and, you know, you're maybe one or two points out of a playoff spot and you think, okay, well, we've got a chance to make the playoffs, but optically, it doesn't look a ton better. Statistically, it doesn't look a ton better. I think at that point, you owe it to yourself if you're David Poile to say, okay, you know, maybe they squeak into the playoffs. How realistic is it if I go out and try to be a buyer here that they make a run towards the Stanley Cup? Because this team, like, it's not about making the playoffs. Obviously, that's the first step, and you have to do that. But with the window they're in right now, it's about competing for a Stanley Cup. And I feel like if you don't really believe you can do that this year, why waste assets on trying to go do it? I think you got to restock and try it again next year. I think that's when honesty comes into play, and David Poile and the hockey ops department are going to have to take a serious look at this team. And if they don't see dramatic improvement over the next couple weeks, even if they are slowly back into the race, I would be hesitant to be a buyer at that point, because, you know, they've been a buyer a lot the last few years. They're running out of assets to do that. They're starting to replenish the cupboard a little bit. I would try to do that even more.
Well, that still may be hard for GM David Poile and company to do.
Sure.
With, like you said, the window they're in, we know time is running out for Pecorine. We know time is running out as a GM for David Poile for him to win that elusive Stanley Cup. He won't be doing this forever. Pecorine won't be the goaltender forever. Shoot, this might be Pecorine's last season.
Yeah.
As an effective NHL goalie, if he continues to fall off the deep end in terms of the results, maybe we're sitting here in the summer talking about Pecorine stepping away before his contract runs out. At the same time, I 100% agree with you. You can't just, you know, carelessly spend assets and go out and try to add to this team when the reality is you're probably not going to, in the current state you're in.
Yeah.
The team that we have seen through 47 games would not beat St. Louis in a 7-game series, would beat Dallas, would not beat Colorado. And it may not even last past 5 games.
No.
Against any of those teams. So we're going to have to see market improvement over this next month for them to be serious buyers.
Well, and the other part of it is it's such a weird year in terms of the standings because you've got Chicago, Winnipeg, and Minnesota you've got to compete with in the Central. The Pacific is nuts this year. Vancouver right now leads the Pacific with 58 points. Edmonton, Calgary, Arizona, and Vegas are all tied at 57. They got 1 point separating the top five teams in the Pacific.
Never seen that before.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. So that's kind of the different dynamic this year. I think the Pacific is a little bit stronger than people thought it was going to be. I remember having conversations with people heading into this year, and they thought this could be the Central Division this year could be the best division in the history of the league.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, the Pacific, I think, has been very good. Now, Central's the top three teams are fantastic. There's no question about that. I say that to say it's just a lot of different things the Predators are going to have to compete with this year in order to make the playoffs. And they're going to have a ton to say about that coming up. They have an important trip to Western Canada coming up against some of these teams I just talked about. They're going to have to win those games. Mm-hmm. And those games specifically, I think, are going to go a long way in deciding what David Poile does with his team at the trade deadline.
Not only that trip, but they host Vegas to start February. So you have some Eastern Conference opponents coming out of the break, but then you have pivotal games within the playoff chase right after that. He's Robbie Stanley. I'm Ryan Porth. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The other thing that David Poile could do is do both selling and buying, which we've seen GMs in the past do. You know, you've got Mikael Granlund, as you mentioned. You've got Craig Smith also on an expiring contract. You could almost shift them in a trade, get some assets, maybe spend some lesser assets on other rentals or players that are going to be here beyond this season and kind of go about it in a hybrid manner like we've seen other teams do in the past.
Yeah, that's certainly an option. We've seen that happen before, and you know, sometimes it's not a major shakeup. It just brings different pieces in, and sometimes for whatever reason that clicks, and there's really no math to it. There's no rhyme or reason to why that's the case. Sometimes it just happens, and there's a flip side of that too. Sometimes, you know, you fall out of the race and maybe you sell guys that we're not talking about right now. I mean, we obviously Granlund and Smith are the two obvious ones because they're unrestricted free agents at the end of the year. But maybe if you fall completely out of the race, maybe a guy like Nick Bonino is on the trade market then. And he's a guy that I think could be very valuable to teams around the league with 1 year left on his contract after this year and is having a great year. So it's different conversations like that that start to creep up if you fall too far out of the race. So it's kind of an interesting time to be David Poile because he's in no man's land at the moment. He doesn't really know which way to go, and he's kind of got a very short amount of time to figure that out. But that's why he's been doing this for 40 years. He's pretty comfortable with it.
I think 100%. He'll be okay. Yeah. I think so too. You mentioned Mikael Granlund earlier. I want to kind of dive deeper into why Granlund has not worked out here in Nashville. That's coming up next. He's Robbie Stanley. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, brought to you every Monday and Wednesday by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard, downtown Nashville. More Preds Insiders coming up next on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in. Ryan Porth, Robbie Stanley here with you. Robbie, obviously, with NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast, talking all things Preds, or as the Preds are in the middle of their bye week / all-star break. The all-star game coming up from St. Louis Saturday evening. Roman Josi will be representing the Preds in that game, and you can hear that game on ESPN 102.5 The Game Saturday night, coverage beginning at 7 o'clock. Robbie, last segment, we talked about Mikael Granlund as a potential trade chip, and I was perusing Twitter last night and came across an audio drop from Score North up in Minnesota, who cover the Minnesota Wild at a high level. And they had a couple of their hosts talking about Mikael Granlund and Kevin Fiala, kind of reflecting on the trade.
Yeah.
And Mikael Granlund's name has come up in recent trade rumors. Bruce Garriock of the Ottawa Sun came out, I believe it was last week, saying that Granlund may be on the block. And here's how Score North up in Minnesota kind of reacted to that news and looking back on the trade with Granlund and Kevin Fiala.
Word comes this week now that he is being shopped by the Nashville Predators. And I know Kevin Fiala can drive us crazy, okay? He can. There's times where he plays like last night, and you're like, what the hell are you doing? But there's also times where he looks dynamic, and he looks like he's got a skill set that fits this league for today's game. Mikael Granlund, can we all just admit now that there's some athletes in this town we get smitten with, and it's not justified? Granlund, wild-wise, is atop that list?
Yes, he is. I'm very sick of this narrative that this trade's still not a win in our books because we could have gotten more from him at the deadline. In a hypothetical world, if you put Mikael Granlund's production on this team right now in the last year of his contract, his value would be at an all-time low. And you know what? You wouldn't even be able to get Kevin Fiala for him. That's the reality. And Paul Fenton was not the brightest guy when it came to running a business and being a sane human being. But clearly the dude knew hockey players and knew trades. So this trade is a win. You can't convince me otherwise, and I'm sick of the narrative that you could have gotten more from. You actually got a pretty good, younger, controllable, as good player of Mikael Granlund. And Bruce Boudreau heightened his value by taking him out of center, putting him on a wing, and we all thought, oh, here's Mikael Granlund. He goes to Nashville on a deep team, and he's thanks. So let's stop this. It's hard to accept when a person is a really crappy individual that he actually was right.
Right.
And that's what it is with Paul Fenton. He actually was right. Sorry. He was right.
That was Judd's Hockey Show on Score North up there in Minneapolis. First of all, Robbie, it sounds like nothing has changed with Kevin Fiala.
It sounds all Kev's doing the same thing.
Coming from a couple of people who watch the Minnesota Wild a lot more than we do. But they now look at that trade as a win for the Minnesota Wild. And in the moment, last season, on deadline day, we thought the Minnesota Wild would get more for Mikael Granlund than just Kevin Fiala. And now, you look back on that trade, and Mikael Granlund has not worked out at all for this Preds team. Like we said last segment, 21 points in 57 games. He also has maybe some of the weirdest goals that he has scored, either in garbage time and it doesn't mean anything, or the goal that he scored against Anaheim where
no one knew it was in
the net. No one knew it was in the net. He had the whip-around goal against Dallas in Game 3 last year of Round 1 that randomly got through Ben Bishop. He's had some weird goals when he has scored goals here with the Nashville Predators. From your vantage point, why is it not working out for Granlund here with the Preds?
Well, I think it's a couple things. Number one, I think people kind of had this myth about him coming in here that he's this dynamic goal scorer. And while he could score goals, he was more of a playmaker. And for a lot of the time that he spent here, especially last year when he first got here, he was on a line with Kyle Turris. And we know what kind of a year Kyle Turris had last year. It was just not very good. And, you know, it was Kyle Turris, Granlund, and Craig Smith. And in the playoffs, they were nowhere to be found. Really, in the regular season, they were nowhere to be found. So when you're a playmaker and you've got Kyle Turris as your centerman, who was not having a good year last year, Craig Smith is a good player, but he's very streaky. It's very difficult to be consistently productive. So I kind of gave him a pass last year and said, okay, he's going to come in here at training camp this year. He's going to have a full training camp. He'll be fine. And for the first like five games, I was like, oh, yeah, he's going to be good. This is good. On a line with Forsberg and Duchesne, probably the best line in the league for the first four or five games. And then it's totally fallen off ever since then. And it's not for lack of playing with good players. Like we said, he's played with Duchesne and Forsberg. He's even played with them since then and has not been as productive. I just think this goes back to what kind of some of the systematic issues were under Peter Laviolette. And that is, number one, the defensemen have the puck all the time. They're leading the rush. If you've noticed, and I have, Roman Josi hadn't had a whole lot of end-to-end rushes the last five, six games. I think that's by design. I think, and not to take away from Roman Josi because he's great, but I think the defensemen have had the puck too much, and they're not been getting him up to the forwards and getting out of the zone quickly. I think we've seen an adjustment there. So maybe that helps Mikael Granlund as they move forward here. But I just think that, coupled with the fact that I don't think quality shots they were able to generate enough under Laviolette's system, I think that played a lot into it. Now, does Mikael Granlund share in a lot of this responsibility? Sure. I don't think he's been very good. I don't think he's been very tough to play against. I don't think he's held onto the puck very well. And I think, could he go somewhere else and be productive once again? Could he get back to the guy who's putting up 55, 60 points per year? Sure. I think he could. But I just don't see that playmaking ability often enough that we saw in Minnesota. Is that him Is that a part of the system he's been playing? I think it's a combination of the two, but it's been pretty obvious from about 10 games into his tenure here. It just hadn't been a fit, man.
Granlund, you bill as a playmaker,
yeah,
and not a goal scorer. He has no assists in his last 14 games.
Yeah, that's unacceptable.
And he's been playing a lot with Forsberg and Duchesne.
Yeah.
It's been mind-boggling to see the numbers that he put up in Minnesota and the effectiveness that he had in a Minnesota Wild jersey not translate here. It's been, you know, maybe he's one of those players, and there's been a good handful of players over the years. I think of Eric Cole in Carolina. Yeah. Eric Cole could not do anything outside of being a Carolina Hurricane, but when he was a Carolina Hurricane, he was dynamic. Yeah. He was good. Maybe Granlund is one of those players that outside of Minnesota, he's just not the same for whatever reason.
You know, it's real cold in Finland. It's real cold in Minnesota. Yeah. It's not that cold here.
Well,
maybe it's messy. Well,
the last couple days, it has been. Yeah. Maybe but they're not playing right now.
It doesn't do him any good.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe we've discovered it here on Bread's Insider.
It's not cold enough
in
Nashville.
Lower the temperature. Can't believe I just said that.
But that trade is now turning into a loss for GM David Poile. As much as it looked like a win at the time, look, Kevin Fiala, it's not like he's gone up to Minnesota and untapped all of the potential that we would see from him. I mean, he has 9 goals in 44 games for the Minnesota Wild this season. And as you heard in that soundbite from Score North earlier, sounds like a lot of the same that we saw from Kevin Fiala specifically last season before the trade. But that is one that's going to sting, because Fiala is going to stay there in Minnesota and still be semi-productive, where Granlund has not been productive at all here.
No, you're right. And look, you knew that was a risk when you made the trade. Number one, the contract left on Granlund. He was going to be a free agent after this season. But you thought if the production was there, okay, you just re-sign him, and that's fine. And then the trade works out. Kevin Fiala, while I agree, I think he's serviceable, and he's been fine in Minnesota this year, he needed to get out of here. I agree. It wasn't a fit here. I don't think he was overly popular in that locker room. Just from the sense I got around being the Predators, I mean, I think they liked him, but I don't think they were just devastated to see Kevin Fiala leave. So I'm not sure that it would have ever gotten any better here in Nashville just because of the fit. But I do think when you trade a guy as talented as Kevin Fiala, remember, a first round pick, a guy that has shown flashes of being a highly skilled player.
Colin Wilson 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. You would hope that the assets you get in return, even if it's for a shorter period of time, gives you production that is at a higher level. And I think everybody expected, I remember when they made that trade that day, everybody said, well, this is a huge win for Nashville. Mikael Granlund's a 60-point guy. He's going to come in here and bolster what is already a deep lineup. You had Wayne Simmonds come in the same day, Brian Boyle had just gotten there, and you thought, okay, well, this Predators team is loaded at forward. You know, I think we were having arguments about who's going to play on the power play. They got so many different options to play on this awful power play to try to turn it around. And he has just flopped ever since, even on the power play. I mean, he's been a guy that's been productive on the power play in Minnesota, got here, can't do anything on the power play. So it's one of those mystifying things, like you said, where sometimes it's a change of scenery that you think is going to be a seamless transition, just falls on its face. And I can think of really no better example in recent Predators history than Mikael Granlund.
Just based off the power play, Granlund had 16 power play assists last season with the Minnesota Wild in 63 games. And in 57 games with the Nashville Predators, he has 3 power play assists. Yeah. Maybe it's because he's been on the second unit and not the first unit, but that really hasn't mattered for this Preds team. Since the start of last season, this power play last season was awful. This year has shown signs of life at different times, but for the most part, hasn't been reliable.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, it's been very inconsistent. And like I said before, I don't think Mikael Granlund is 100% to blame here. I think a lot of circumstances have played into what's happened with him. Just you can make the same argument for Kyle Turris as well. But I also don't think that he is just free from blame either. There's some blame to go around everywhere. And like I said before, unless he just lights it up in the next 10 games or so and just suddenly figures it out, I don't foresee a circumstance where if you're the Predators, you can keep him. I think you've got to trade him.
What needs to happen for this Nashville Predators team to make the playoffs for a sixth straight season. We'll get into that next. He's Robbie Stanley. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show. Preds Insiders taking you until Smashville live at 7 o'clock. Braden Gall will be joined by Stu Grimson out at Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House out there in East Nashville. Ryan Porth and Robbie Stanley here with you on Preds Insiders. And the question that I posed before the break, Robbie, what needs to happen for the Nashville Predators to make the playoffs? They are currently on pace for 89 points, which should not be enough to get into the playoffs. They're going to have to kick it into gear. Everybody knows that here down the stretch. And for them, according to sportsclubstats.com, our best friend this time of year, sportsclubstats.com says at 93 points, they would have a 90% chance of making it to the playoffs. And to get to 93 points, they would have to go about 19-12-4 to get in. Now, to have a 100% chance of making the playoffs, you have to get to 98 points. 22-10-3 can get you, a record like that can get you to 98 points. So when you look at the numbers, that's how it kind of fares for this Preds team in terms of what needs to happen to get to the playoffs. For you, not just looking at wins and losses, what can result in the wins and losses that can get them into the playoffs?
Well, there are two things that immediately come to mind when you ask that question. Number one is the goaltending. It's got to be light years better than it was in the first half of the season. Now, we've started to see some signs of that from Pecorine lately.
A .935 save percentage in his last three outings.
Yes, and that is encouraging because you're going to need about that level of goaltending as they move down the stretch here in order for me to believe they're going to get where they need to go. That's the chief thing with this team, and that's been probably their biggest bugaboo all year long has been their goaltending. I mean, we could talk about the coaching change. We can talk about some of the forwards underperforming. Goaltending-wise, it's been a huge disappointment, and they've got to get that part figured out. If they don't, they're not going anywhere. So that to me, is the number one thing. Both Pecorine and UC Saros have to be better. Saros has not been good. He's got to find a way when they're spelling Pecorine with these starts, because remember, they have a ton of games coming up. They're going to have to use both goaltenders a lot.
A lot of back-to-backs.
A lot of back-to-backs. A lot. Both goaltenders are going to have to play. So both of your goaltenders are going to have to raise their game to a different level than we've seen for the majority of this season. Pecorine just really needs to get back to how he's playing the first 5, 6, 7 games of this year, and he'll be fine. Number two, you got to get your big money centers going. And that starts with Ryan Johansson. We talked about that a little bit earlier. Matt Duchesne's been coming alive a little bit offensively as of late, but Kyle Turris I put in that mix as well. Those three guys, that's where your engine starts.
$22 million between those three.
$22 million. And if you kind of pay attention to some of the things they've been trying to do, I think John Hines and his system, they want to get the center more activated. And I think they want, you know, to turn the puck over in the defensive zone, get the puck back, and have the defenseman get the puck to the center and them go up the ice that way. And I think specifically Kyle Turris, that's basically the way he played in Ottawa. He had the puck on his stick entering the zone on the rush a lot, and that's how he was effective. Matt Duchesne, like I said, he's been coming on as of late. He's been playing much better. This whole thing, I think, to me, revolves around Ryan Johansson. He's got to play like an $8 million center. Hasn't played anywhere close to that, in my opinion, so far this year.
And he knows it.
And he knows it. Look, he talked about it after the game the other day. He said, you know, this year has been what it's been for me. And that's basically his way of saying, yeah, I haven't been very good this year. But he wanted to focus on the Buffalo game. He liked how he played in that game. But it's his responsibility now to carry that forward as they come back from the break. You don't get much benefit of the doubt from me or from anybody else when you're making $8 million per year. You're a big money guy. They've paid you to produce. You got to do it. It's the same thing with Matt Duchesne. It's really the same thing with Kyle Turris now. We've all talked about what was very obvious to see was a fractured relationship between Kyle Turris and Peter Laviolette. That excuse is now gone. That excuse is thrown out the door. It's time for him to be productive as well. Now, I understand that he's been largely in a fourth line role, and there's only so much you can do there. But on the power play, you got to find a way to put the puck in the net. He's still on the power play, had a good shot the other night that I think Craig Smith tipped in the back of the net. So you've got to find ways to be productive, those three guys. I think if Johansson and Duchesne start to be productive consistently, Forsberg's numbers are going to rise. Arvidsson's numbers are going to rise. To me, everything offensively begins and ends with those three guys.
Would you like to see John Hines kind of stick with a forward unit in terms of the line combinations, at least for a few games to see what works? Because I know, and I understand, he's going through a period of seeing what does work, what doesn't work within his system. But Ryan Johansson isn't going to excel with Kyle Yarncroke and Austin Watson as his wingers in terms of offensive output. We've now seen Forsberg, Duchesne, and Granlund together for a few games, but it just seems like there needs to be some consistency in terms of who is Ryan Johansson's right wing. It has gone from Arvidsson to Smith to now Watson.
Yep.
Ryan Johansson always excelled when it was Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson, and even when those three have been together at times of the season, they haven't looked the same as they have in the past. I just feel like there needs to be some consistency within those lines.
I agree, and I think, you know, in order for that to happen, you got to find something that works. You got to find something that clicks for a game or two to give you reason to leave it together.
Sure.
Now, like, you know, he was talking about it. In a perfect world, he would like to leave lines together, but you can't just leave unproductive lines together for six straight games, especially in the situation that they're in. I mean, if you go a game or two and your line's not getting it done, you got to change it up because you just simply don't have the time or the luxury that they've had in years past to tinker around with those things. So, yes, to answer your question, I would like to see him stick with a line. I think Duchesne's line, I wouldn't touch it right now with Forsberg, Duchesne, and Granlund. I know we've talked about the struggles of Granlund, but still from a possession standpoint, they've been pretty good with that line. I like what I've seen from Bonino's line with Grimaldi and Smith so far this year. Now, it's been a little bit less productive lately than it has been. But really, the main question we've been trying to figure out all season long, if Forsberg's not playing on that left wing with Ryan Johansson, who's going to be there? Kyle Yarncroke's done okay, but Kyle Yarncroke hadn't scored a goal since like mid-December. I mean, it's been a long time. He was kind of streaky there for a while and playing above his head, and now Kyle Yarncroke has turned back into Kyle Yarncroke that we've seen the last two or three years, where he goes weeks, sometimes months, without scoring a goal, and that cannot happen if you're playing with Ryan Johansson. So, to me, you've got to figure out who's playing on that left wing with Ryan Johansson. I think they're going to put Arvidsson back there with him at some point. Maybe it's Kyle Turris. Maybe you got to get creative and say, Craig Smith, look, I know you've played right wing your entire career and you've tried left wing for three games this year. You got to go over and do it. We got to have somebody up there that can score with Ryan Johansson. But until they get that part figured out, I think it's going to be difficult for Johansson to be consistently productive. Now, having said that, some of it's on him and Arvidsson. Regardless of who's playing on your left wing, you got to find a way to be at least more dangerous than they have been, because a lot too many times this year, games have gone by and you look at the score sheet after the game and you're like, what were Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson doing? Like, neither one of them had a shot. Like, they're not even dangerous, and that can't happen.
Well, why do you think Victor Arvidsson? We've spent a lot of time on Johansson. Why do you think Victor Arvidsson hasn't been as productive this season?
Well, if you take a look at Arvidsson, number one, his shot volume is way down. It's way down. And he's typically a guy that's firing, you know, six, seven pucks per game. That's not happening this year. And typically, most of his points and most of his production comes off the rush. So he's not really, I mean, it's not, you know, it's kind of physics. You look at him, he's not the biggest guy. If you start playing a cycle game with Victor Arvidsson, he's not going to last. Like, he just gets pushed around. Most of his points and his production and his playmaking comes off the rush, and they haven't been able to generate many rush opportunities this year. And because of that, his shots have gone down, his scoring has gone down, and until they find a way to spring him free, you've got to, I mean, that's going to continue to be the case. I think teams have figured out, okay, you know, we used to see it, and I almost made fun of it, they did it so much, when they got the puck in the defensive zone and that line was on the ice, how many times did we see them do that little chip alley-oop play where it just sends Victor Arvidsson on a streak, like he's basically running a Hail Mary route in the NFL to catch up with the puck, and he's on a breakaway. We haven't seen that a whole lot this year. I think teams have taken that away.
Even with Peter Laviolette.
And they haven't adjusted well to springing Victor Arvidsson free on the rush. And that is concerning, because you wonder, okay, well, if teams have schemed a way to take his rush opportunities away, is he really an effective player otherwise? It's been a very mixed bag result on that so far this year, and they've got to get that figured out.
Well, and he also gets beat up a lot.
He does.
With his size, you know, he hasn't looked the same since he got back from the injury that he suffered from the Bortuzzo cross-check in the lower back, that he missed 12 games with the injury. He just hasn't looked the same all season long, whether it's the opponent scheming out those kind of, you know, cherry picking plays where Arvidsson is was benefiting from, or the fact that his motor just isn't the same as it was the last few years.
And that's been the concern even when the playoffs come, is maybe his production's gone down a little bit. And I think a lot of people have attributed that to, you know, in the regular season, Victor Arvidsson is going all the time. His motor is just so high. Well, when you get to the playoffs, everybody's motor is like that. And does that have an adverse effect on Victor Arvidsson? You know, with the season he's had so far, maybe you can make an argument that's been the case.
Well, he did nothing against Dallas last year in the playoffs. Season before, I thought he was okay. Against Colorado and Winnipeg.
Yeah.
During the cup run, he was silent.
Yeah.
A lot of that run.
Yeah. And that goes back to, you know, maybe the motor has been the thing that separates him. And I think, look, his work ethic, a lot of people, even on Twitter, have called that into question. To me, I don't think his work ethic is any different.
Right. And when I say the motor isn't the same, that doesn't mean for me that I'm questioning the work ethic.
Yeah.
It's just the motor may not be as
full capacity.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Right. So, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Robbie Stanley. I'm Ryan Porth. Robbie, thank you so much for joining me here in studio this evening.
It's always a legendary conversation between you and I. Loved it. Thank
always
you, Porth.
Always, on and off the air.
That's right.
For Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast, I'm Ryan Porth. Thanks for listening to Preds Insiders. Coming up next, it is Smashville Live from Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville with Stu Grimson and Braden Gall. Keep it locked right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.